Blog Talk Radio.
All right, and welcome to a special edition of the NOAA Rundown. I am Jordan. I am joined by Will Osgood tonight, and we've got a treat for y'all. Usually our shows are revolved around sports and anything sports, specifically Louisiana sports, but we tend to venture out because we have a lot of interests that extend beyond the state of Louisiana. Well, as does our culture, too, here. So with the culture of Louisiana, we pull from a lot of different countries and backgrounds. And one thing that Will and I have in common, and we talk about it, is our love for the Marvel Cinematic Universe and how they've pulled all the timelines together and how they've wrote this beautiful story out and seen it play out to the more recent film of Infinity War. So, Will, before we get started, and I know I ran this by you before in the chat, but have you had a chance to see Thanos and do his dirtiest in Infinity War?
I have, and in fact, I was going to put in, I can't remember which podcast it was, but one of them, a Thanos reference, and I just... It seemed like it was too soon, and there was still too much heartbreak and stress on my end. It was too soon for me, much less, you know, possibly being too soon for the audience. But yeah, I have.
Good. Yeah, I feel like enough time has passed that everyone has now had a chance to sit down, be as shocked as the rest of us were when we saw the movie for the first time, had a moment to process it, think about it, dwell on it, talk to their friends about it, write blogs about it, whatever they do.
Yep.
So now we have our time now to discuss it. So we're going to kind of break it down, and we're going to step back from Infinity War and kind of go back to where it all started. You know, we're now in phase three of the Marvel Universe. It all started with phase one and Iron Man. I think we've all seen Iron Man, introduce Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, pivotal character of the Avengers. And then you've had Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, the first Avengers. Then they pulled it all together to end phase one with Marvel's The Avengers. So we're going to kind of talk about that to start it off, Will. My thoughts are Iron Man was, and I think still remains, one of the best movies that they've done so far in the cinematic universe. Robert Downey Jr. is just perfect for the role of Iron Man. I thought they kind of stumbled a bit whenever they did the first Thor standalone movie. And like Captain America, the first Avenger for me was okay, but the Avengers again knocked it out the park. So I thought they bookended phase one perfectly with a few stumbling blocks in the middle, but it set up the background for the characters, introduced some villains, and really started kind of pushing the train along to phase two. So, you just heard me rave about Iron Man, the first Iron Man, and the Avengers. The Avengers is a movie that comes on FX all the time now. And, like, if it's on, I'm going to watch it. It's kind of like Shawshank Redemption and The Godfather to me. If it's on, I'm watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
How are you feeling about those and how they bled into and introduced Phase 2 of the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, so I actually, not so much disagreement, it's just I enjoyed, at least, you know, the initial Thor standalone movie and the initial Captain America. I think in general, what I like about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, kind of in a general sense, and we'll get to this even more as we, you know, get get through the phases and get closer to modern, or, you know, to where we are now. But I feel like each movie has its own, because, or each character, each character series, however you want to put it, you know what I'm saying? Each have kind of their own feel and their own, looks like Jordan dropped. I'm sure he'll be back on, but I'll continue my thought until he does get back on. Each of the movies seem to have kind of their own universe, in a sense, their own feel, their own way of just existing, if you will. And so, you know, whether it's Thor in Asgard, and you have Loki who we're introduced to there, and you know, and Captain America is this like perfect all American boy from, you know, from the first, you know, from World War One times, who's been frozen or whatever, and is now back to life. And each character has their own like really interesting background story, and because of that, I feel like each movie is different. Like I don't feel like if I'm watching Captain America that I'm watching the same movie, or even I'm not conscious of the other characters and their stories when I'm watching one of those movies. Because they, like I said, they all have kind of a different feel. And so, but then you come and I totally agree with you. Like they, when they do an Avengers movie, so, you know, whether it's the first Avengers or any of them since, they find a way to blend those stories and those characters together so well. And so all of that to say, to get to the point that I was trying to make, which was that because of that, I guess because I like origin stories, just because I'm a story person, I love stories. You know, I appreciated the initial offerings, if you will, whether it be Captain America or Thor, maybe more than some others do. The other point out, just really quick, that I'll make about that, though, too, you see this in sitcoms and other kinds of, you know, TV also. Oftentimes, the first go at something isn't necessarily the best, but then the more they do it, you know, the better it gets, the more, not so much reps, but just the more they allow the character to be developed, or characters. And I think we've seen that as well.
Yeah. I feel that you had Iron Man and you had Thor, and even Loki's backstory is really starting to become fleshed out some, which for me, Loki is just a very interesting character and a very good villain. Although you always seem that he can't quite pull it all together for victory. Like he always stumbles, and I think that's his subconscious gnawing at him, and that bit of humanity, to where he's not all bad. He just presents himself as bad. And that kind of plays out in future movies. What I liked about the Avengers is just how it all came together, how you introduced Black Widow. I really like how they introduced Hawkeye. The Hulk. Yeah. So in Phase 1, too, which is interesting, speaking of the Hulk, you had the Incredible Hulk 2008 come out, which came out right after Iron Man, and you had Edward Norton playing the Hulk. Now, it wasn't as bad as Ang Lee's version, but Mark Ruffalo and his performance as the Hulk has probably been the best since Lou Ferrigno. And I'm not saying that Lou Ferrigno was great, but he's just like your standard person that played the Hulk, because everyone remembers, oh, when he, the Hulk, Lou Ferrigno. Like, that is the guy. But Mark Ruffalo and the way that they use the animation to make the Hulk almost ape-like in his movements and his actions and characteristics really, I think, has been the best representation, not only of Bruce Banner, but of the Hulk as well.
Yeah, so, and real quick, since you're on the since you brought it up, were you as disappointed as most people were in the initial Hulk as played by Edward Norton? Obviously, you praised, you know, Mark Ruffalo's rendition of it, but were you as disappointed in the initial?
No, I wasn't disappointed in it. I thought it could have been a little better, but I didn't think it was terrible by any stretch. Not as nitpicky as some people have been towards it at all. I think Mark Ruffalo in that version of the Hulk's better, but I wouldn't say it was bad.
Yeah, the Hulk is... Do you feel like he's a really likable character? Because I could see how maybe he wouldn't be, or how it would be possible for him not to be, but I feel like the way Mark Ruffalo plays it, at least, the Hulk is just a really likable character, and I guess Bruce Banner is as well, to me.
Yeah, I think so too, and you know, that's one thing that you see in the Avengers is the amount of comedy that they're able to write into some of these more serious movies. Like the Avengers, the plot of it is pretty serious, but you have these elements of humor that not only lighten the mood, but keep the audience entertained and makes the audience also laugh because of how action-packed it is. And I think one of the best parts is whenever the Hulk takes Loki and just pounds him into the ground and says, "Puny human." Like that's something that all audiences remember, and it's such a good scene, and it makes the Hulk more charming, I think, than he really has any business being.
Right. Absolutely.
So that Marvel's The Avengers ended phase one. Loki is kidnapped. They now have possession of the Tesseract. Thor is bringing Loki back to Asgard. So then phase two starts off. And what kicks off phase two is Iron Man 3, which has good elements, but a completely terrible rendition of the Mandarin, who... in the comics is a really great villain, but in the movie was very, very poorly represented. They followed that up with Thor: The Dark World, which was, in my opinion, worse than the first Thor. But then things started picking up, or as wrestlers would say, business is starting to pick up. You had my favorite movie so far in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, released in 2014, Captain America: Winter Soldier, which not only you had the introduction of the Winter Soldier, you had Captain America and Black Widow, the introduction of Falcon. You're really starting to lay the groundwork. You have some incredible fight scenes. Black Widow shines. And then you also introduce... Black Panther, if I'm not mistaken, too, in Winter Soldier. Am I correct there?
Civil War was when he came in.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes I get those two confused. But
I do too.
Then you had Guardians of the Galaxy, which, from a comic book perspective, to think that you are going to have the Guardians of the Galaxy as not only a movie, but a box office hit, an extended box office hit, is just truly unbelievable, because you're taking characters nobody really knows about. Star-Lord, or Rocket Raccoon or Drax or Gamora or Groot and all these characters.
Yeah.
You don't really know about them. And not only do you make them charming, you make them charismatic, you put a lot of action into it, you extend the universe to the actual universe.
Right.
Then you follow that up with Avengers Age of Ultron and bookend Phase 2 with Ant-Man, which was just a super fun movie. I questioned Paul Rudd as Ant-Man, but I thought Paul Rudd really hit it out the park as Ant-Man. So let's go ahead and cycle back. Now that all Phase 2 movies have been laid out, which one of those were you able to catch?
Yeah, most of them. And I love what you just talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. I think one of the, before I get to that, shout out to Anthony Mackie, New Orleans boy. That's our little tie-in to the NOLA rundown there. Anthony Mackie from New Orleans. If you're not a fan of Falcon and Anthony Mackie, then, you need to be. So, anyway. I like him as an actor just in general. So, it's easy to get excited when he shows up in Civil War and then, in the other movies. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about real quick was just, with Guardians of the Galaxy, and you talked about how, it was a series of characters and just a part of the Marvel universe that, at least the comic book universe, that most fans wouldn't really be, too aware of. It was kind of discreet and hidden a little bit. But, I think unbeknownst or unexpected, perhaps, you get Chris Pratt, to kind of headline that movie. And he's coming off of, obviously, he gains his stardom, with Parks and Rec. And then the current renditions of the Jurassic Park series. And he's just, he's bigger than life. And so you capitalize on that. You put him as the big name in that movie. And so you pretty much guarantee people are going to go and see it. And then you make, like you said, a really quality movie and you have all these characters who people just end up falling in love with. And I know most people talk about Guardians of the Galaxy that it is kind of like almost like a change up from the rest of the Marvel universe, just in the sense that its basis is more as kind of a comedic movie. And yet it works, and that kind of goes back again to what I was saying earlier, just about how every franchise within, the Marvel universe kind of has its own distinct feel and its own setup. And again, the way they've tied that in. And then, I agree. Like, Ant-Man is actually probably one of my favorite Marvel movies. Even though, it's not necessarily the traditional, or at least, it doesn't go about it or have the same feel as some of the other series. But Paul Rudd, I agree, just did a great job. Ant-Man.
So what you saw too in this phase was the beginning of Thanos. At the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, you started getting all of those discussions with the Guardians about Thanos, Ronan the Accuser, serves Thanos, And if you didn't know anything about Thanos, you're like, who is this dude, and why is everyone so scared of him?
Yeah.
But someone that should have been scary, and he was presented that way, but I don't think to the extent. I guess you can't really make that to the extent, because in the comic books it took several different superhero teams to pull him down, and he altered the universe was Ultron.
Uh-huh.
So Age of Ultron, it did its job in continuing the plot line. You start to get the fissures there between Captain America and Iron Man as far as how the Avengers should be ran.
Right.
This is, you're continuing the story. You introduce Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Two integral characters to the second iteration of the Avengers in the comic books. Two longtime mm-hmm. Avengers, especially Scarlet Witch. You also introduce Vision, who is another integral part of the second phase of the Avengers in the comic books, who is also another integral part not only to the Avengers team, but further down the line as well. So while...
Yep.
I don't believe the movie was as entertaining as the first Avengers. It did its job and then some as continuing the plot line.
Yeah.
And like I said, Ant-Man's just more fun than it had any right to be. They took a character who's kind of disinteresting, so he can make himself the size of an ant and made it fun.
Yeah. Right.
So phase three. And this is where we're at, and this is kind of where our discussion's really gonna start kicking into high gear. Captain America:
yep.
Civil War. So we'll start from there and then work our way down. Civil War is also in my top five of Marvel movies. That movie was, I thought, so well put together. While some people
yep.
are down on the big fight scene at the airport between Iron Man's side and Captain America's side, I thought it was very well done. I couldn't imagine a better scene. You introduce Black Panther, who is a great character in and of itself.
Yep.
You had the final battle between Captain America and Winter Soldier against Iron Man, which is just... Almost causes you to have a tear in your eye because you've seen these two now in multiple movies together, form a team together, build a relationship, and now that relationship has just been torn down to its core, and they're fighting each other, and one side
yeah.
has to win, one side has to lose. Just an incredible movie, I think, personally, front to back. I've seen it multiple times. So, whenever they were choosing sides and you saw it coming, were you like, holy shit, this is about to throw down, look at all these people, look, it's Spider-Man, he's here, Falcon's here, Ant-Man's here,
yeah.
This is crazy. What were your thoughts when you first saw that battle, those battle lines being drawn, and it was about to go down?
Yeah, it's like, well, I think it plays into what you had already mentioned that they had been developing through the plot was just this idea that the ego, you know, of Iron Man of I can't think of his actual name at the moment. sorry, my
Robert Downey Jr.
Well, no, his
Tony
character.
Stark?
Tony Stark. Yeah, Tony Stark. Sorry. So the ego of Tony Stark / Iron Man, and not so much the ego, but I would say the conviction of Steve Rogers, and you see those two things really, or those two men, you know, they've been butting heads before this. But obviously it ramps up to like this nth degree here in Civil War. And And I think it's the conviction that Steve Rogers has that I don't think he wants to do it, you know, because he's so much about like doing what's right and what a lot of us would probably call goody two shoes, and then you have this show off billionaire, you know, whatever. But that's so much of like what the overall plot line is about. And that's kind of what's fun about this whole series is, you know, there's, and you even kind of mentioned it with Loki a little bit, like the good guy isn't always good and the bad guy isn't always bad. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes they can flip roles and they can play different roles even within the same character. But to be more directly or to more directly answer your question, there's still like a humanity part to it. And you're like, no, like this can't happen. Like you're the Avengers. Like if y'all can't come together, like the universe is screwed, you know? And so there's that frustration element too, at least from my perspective. But the fight scenes, yeah, were absolutely incredible. Probably some of the best fight scenes of the entire Marvel universe, at least to this point. I think we're in Civil War. To see them divided there, it's crazy. I don't really know how else to articulate it than that.
Yeah, it's the relationship between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers and the evolution of that relationship. Both play their parts perfectly. Tony being the egomaniac billionaire smartass, and Steve being the 1940s man of his word, upholder of good, classic moral guy that you kind of think of when you think of 1940s people.
Yeah.
It's an interesting dynamic to watch play out. And yep. Watching the evolution of their relationship, how they try to convince people of whether their righteousness, and seeing those characters that they're trying to convince pick sides. and watching then Hawkeye and Black Widow, an impressionable Spider-Man, a former con and Ant-Man, a military man himself and Falcon.
Yeah.
A prince who's leading a country in Black Panther, and a loyal... Do what?
I said newly minted king, or not even minted at that point, but yeah, the leader. Sorry, we'll get to that more.
No, and then a business partner in Rhodes, a War Machine, the guy that plays War Machine. And so it's interesting watching all of that take place. And then, too, you see in Civil War, not only can Ant-Man be the size of an ant, much like how he was in the comic books while he was Ant-Man, he's also Giant Man. And you see him test the limits of his ability, which also gives you another interesting dynamic, too, for the characters. So the end of Civil War, you have Winter Soldier going to Wakanda. And going to Wakanda. You see Black Widow and Steve Rogers kind of going off the grid. The Scarlet Witch and Vision also go off to do their own thing. the Avengers project is pretty much disassembled. Everyone is off doing their own thing, and the two leaders of it aren't talking. They're now diametrically opposed. So we take a break from that part of it and introduce a new character, and from my opinion, a very interesting character, and a character whose powers are almost hard to grasp. And that's Doctor Strange. I thought they did a good job explaining Doctor Strange, and it was a wild movie to watch. I wouldn't say it was a great movie to watch. It's far from bad, but it was interesting.
Right.
However,
oh, yeah.
Special effects in that movie were outstanding.
Agreed.
So, and I will say, you see Stephen Strange's ability with his Infinity Stone and how he defeats Dormammu at the end of it. You're like, all right, this is some foreshadowing here, although we don't know it at the time. This is some foreshadowing of events that are going to transpire 2 years from now.
Yeah.
And really, that kind of sums up Doctor Strange, right? Like, there's not much more to talk about Doctor Strange.
Yeah, there's really not. I mean, yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I don't have anything else to add, even just to agree.
So then that brings us to another incredible movie, which I thought was extremely well done, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. There's a lot to say about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. You have now Baby Groot, who is as charming and as charismatic as his little ass can be. You also introduce Ego, the living planet, who I thought... Now, Kurt Russell is one of my favorite actors of all time, and I thought he played his part brilliantly. Were you able to catch that film?
You know, I think I've seen little bits and pieces. I haven't seen the whole thing from start to finish, unfortunately.
Oh, man. So, you need to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, now I know how much I need to.
Yeah, so you start learning more about Thanos. Michael Rooker as Yondu is endearing as he can be. And it just further establishes the story. Star-Lord and his scrappy pals and their shenanigans throughout the galaxy. The relationships that they make along the way. And then they also introduce, and I'm going to forget the name of these people, so I'm going to have to look it up real quick.
Oh, shucks.
But they introduce the people that you're going to need to know, the Sovereign. They're the golden people in the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're going to play a very important role in the next Avengers movie that we're kind of setting up here as we discuss this.
Yep.
So the next one, Spider-Man Homecoming. I bought it. I caught it on sale for like $9 on Blu-ray, so I bought it. And my wife and I watched it in my living room and really enjoyed it. Like, did you catch any of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans?
I did. They were okay. Like, they weren't terrible, but... I don't... Like, they definitely would not fit within the Marvel Universe.
No, definitely not now. But Spider-Man, the way this Spider-Man works, the Homecoming version... I thought it might be the best version to date. And I thought the Tobey Maguire version was really good. But you start to establish the background, flesh out this version of Spider-Man, and you introduce the Vulture, which, while he's not my favorite Spider-Man villain. Michael Keaton plays him, so you know it's going to be knocked out the park, because Michael Keaton is one of the underappreciated actors of our time, and he absolutely freaking nails Vulture. And you also set up the Shocker as well, so you start to get the foundation of a possible Sinister Six movie if they want to do one, which if they do, I'm here for that. Just going to say that right now.
You're here for that. That's, I hear you.
I am here for that, because that's going to be awesome. But you just have a fun little movie right there. Not so much important to the scope of it. But then we get to the final three movies here in Phase 3. And I know this was one of your favorites, if I remember correctly, Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I'm a big Thor fan. I just like the Thor character, I think, and the way that I get the Hemsworths confused. It's Chris, right? Chris Hemsworth is the one who plays Thor? So just the way he plays Thor, I feel like it makes me feel like no one else could play that role. That he's just perfect for it. But then, in that movie, I mean, you have him lose, you know, basically the source of his power. He loses his, you know, his hammer, and then loses everything else too, right? And it's just like, whoa, like, because before that, at least to me, like, he seemed pretty invincible. I mean, yeah, he was challenged by Loki and challenged by, in the first couple of movies, you know, some of the other villains that he faced, but it never seemed like he was really in any danger of losing his power or he always just seemed like he was so far above that all of the rest of it was just kind of a really hard practice for a good football team or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, like this was just kind of setting up for his role in the Avengers movies. But then in this movie, like he actually does, you know, lose everything. And so he becomes a little more human even than he had been, you know?
Yeah, he also...
If that's the right way to put it, I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. But while he loses the Mjolnir, his hammer, he also discovers, I guess, his true power, and he actually becomes the god of thunder and lightning and storms.
Right.
And you had Loki talking about it in the first Avengers movie. You hear the thunder and you see some lightning, and Loki kind of looks scared. And they're like, what are you scared of, a little thunder? He's like, no, I'm scared of what comes after it.
Uh-huh.
You actually have Thor become the god that he is. And to fight off his sister, Hela, which is played to perfection in the Thor movie. Which, I mean, it's kind of hard not to play whenever Kate Blanchett's in there. Because Kate Blanchett's just a terrific actress. But she plays her part perfectly. And then you also find out what the hell happened to Thor. I mean, to the Hulk. He's off being the best damn gladiator in the universe.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
And so then, you're also introduced to Valkyrie, who's going to play an important role further down. And you just kind of get caught up with characters that you haven't seen in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So then that brings us, and Will, I know this is about to touch, pulling one of your heartstrings here. We go back to Earth, where we last saw glimpses of at the end of Civil War. It's where the Winter Soldier's hanging out and being rehabilitated. We go to Wakanda and see the realm of Black Panther. And I know this
Wakanda
is your movie. Just, this is, that's right. I'm crossing my arms as we speak. But because this is your movie, I want you to start kind of break it down for us.
Yeah, I mean, I could do a whole podcast on this. I've written three articles on it. So I'll try to synthesize my thoughts into a relatively concise manner. But then, you know, I talked about how, you know, the other franchises and everything, how they were able to kind of have their own distinct feel. Well, that is no more true than in Wakanda and with Black Panther. And just, everything about it is just so just striking and beautiful. And, you know, even the music, like, and I loved, you know, if you haven't listened to the soundtrack, that is primarily Kendrick Lamar, but also some other hip hop artists. And then there's even another soundtrack, I guess, that's really just like the music from the movie. And so the music, the costuming, if you will, you know, the clothing that they wear, it's all amazing. The way that in Wakanda, women are empowered and not just looked at as, well, as they often are, as second-class citizens, but they're empowered and they actually kind of run Wakandan society in a lot of ways. And then even just, and of course, I think probably the big, like, theme or storyline through this movie, you know, is that there's, and kind of as I mentioned before, but going a little deeper, there's this this sense that you know, even a bad guy like Eric Killmonger can make some really good points and can you know, have some really good ideas, and his sense of justice and his sense of what it would look like for Wakanda to operate on a larger scale in the world, like in some ways, T'Challa actually employs that after you know, he lets Killmonger die, and so it's, I could talk about it forever. But to kind of hopefully transition back, we see that at the end of this movie that Wakanda is now going to play a huge role within the Marvel Universe. And not just the battle scenes, but that the nation of Wakanda is going to... promote and the words are hard, but basically, like, vibranium, that, you know, the greatest resource that they have and one of the greatest resources on the planet, is now going to be available, and their science and technology will be available, and their land ultimately is going to become available. And so Wakanda will no longer be the same. I get the ladies confused, not Shuri, not, it's Okoye. She actually says that basically, in the middle of Infinity War, like, Wakanda will never be the same. And it's when this, you know, climactic battle scene is about to begin in Wakanda. So maybe that's a good transition. I don't know. Hopefully.
Yeah, we I try to see all these movies in theaters, and that was one that I saw in theaters with my wife, and we both really enjoyed the movie. Now, I will say, a little controversial opinion here, that I really did like the movie, I wasn't over the moon with Michael B. Jordan's performance as Killmonger. I thought I get why he was angry all the time, but I thought that his character could have had a little more, I guess, room for emotional flexibility. He's a trained soldier.
Yeah.
And most soldiers don't succeed being angry all the time. I've read enough about them that you have to have some strategy about yourself and be a little more calm and collected. And I didn't get that from his character while watching the movie.
I can see that.
That really was my biggest negative towards it. And, you know, that's not a huge gripe in the grand scheme of things. I will say that my favorite character in the whole movie was M'Baku, because he was just awesome. But the way the movie sets up, the way the movie introduces Wakanda and is going to introduce Wakanda to the rest of the world, the technology, it's really going to play an important part preceding the movie.
Yeah.
And that takes us finally to Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
So we have all these scattered pieces. We have all this map to work with.
Yeah.
We have. So the movie opens with where Thor Ragnarok left off. You have their spaceship that has left Asgard. It's not necessarily in great shape. They're hailing for help. They're being attacked. And then you see what's happened. The ship's a wreck. Thor, Loki, and the Hulk are there. You don't see, and Heimdall is there as well.
Right.
You don't see Valkyrie. So that's a little mystery for later on. I mean, you don't know what happened to her, but chances are a character that played such an important part in Thor Ragnarok just doesn't die, and they make no mention of it.
Yeah.
So you have a feeling that she survived somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have what? So the film starts off making a point, and spoilers.
And that is
just in case you haven't seen it, but spoilers ahead. Loki just gets straight up murdered. Like, he tries to pull his Loki deceptive stuff on Thanos, doesn't work. Thanos is just like, done. You're dead.
Yep.
After that, my wife kind of had to lean her hand over and lift my mouth up, because I'm like, are you serious? Like, they're just going to kill Loki like that?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
and then he beats the Hulk bad enough to where the Hulk doesn't even come out for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So, like, after that point, I'm like, I knew Thanos was a badass, but holy hell.
Yep. Didn't know he was this much of a badass.
Right. So, you know, then we see some of the henchmen. You start to, of Thanos, you set it up with Gamora talking to Star-Lord, Chris Pratt, and having a conversation. And there's some foreshadowing there, and not really subtle foreshadowing at all. Because she's straight up being like, look, Thanos captures me, I want you to just take me out. And you know, like, you just don't talk about that kind of stuff without it happening, you know?
Right.
So, before I ramble on the whole movie, why don't you, I feel like I can just talk about this whole movie. Well, stop me, save me from myself. and start talking more about this movie.
Yeah, so I think, as you know, as you said, it's really, I mean, the point of this movie was to try to start to kind of tie together the loose ends and to finish off phase three and get into phase four. And so one of the key things that happens fairly on in the movie, you know, basically right after where you stop talking, is, you know, Tony Stark goes to Doctor Strange and they realize, okay, the Infinity Stones are in danger. And Thanos,
so how great of a scene was that between two brilliant men who were both kind of smartasses?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, absolutely. And it was perfect. But one of the key lines for moving the story ahead, and I'm probably going to screw up the line, but basically was, you know, Tony Stark saying, or admitting that, you know, he needed Steve Rogers' help, and he needed, you know, in order to bring the Avengers back together. But we're not talking. And Doctor Strange is just like, or one of either him or one of, I can't remember exactly, but basically just like, well, that's not an option. Like, you got to make it happen. And, you know, and so he pulls out his cell phone and tries to call him and all that. And just, it seemed so, for the moment, like it was so understated. and so anyway, so eventually, you know, the Avengers end up getting back together, but Thor ends up, but without Thor, I mean, he's, you know, he's back in the other realm of the universe, and runs into the Guardians of the Galaxy. And so why don't you pick us back up there?
Yeah, so I'm trying to pull myself together. Okay, so he meets up with the Guardians of the Galaxy, and he calls, what's he call Rocket? He calls him Possum or Rabbit.
Rabbit. I think it's Rabbit.
Yeah. So he calls him that the whole time, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, the entire movie.
Yeah.
I love that too.
But then you see the relationship between Scarlet Witch and Vision, and they're, you know, I don't know if they're lovers, but they're getting really close to being that. If they haven't already broken that ground, they're attacked by some of Thanos' henchmen. Yeah, I mean, you can definitely get that impression. They're attacked by some of the Thanos' henchmen. And then Captain America and Black Widow come to the rescue. I believe Falcon as well, right?
I've only seen this movie once, so I don't remember all the details.
Yeah, same here. So I'm going off memory. And I was geeking out the whole time, too. So,
right.
But one line that kind of stuck out to me is one of Thanos' henchmen, like, they're legit trying to kill Scarlet Witch and Vision. And Black Widow's like, we're not going to kill you, but we will if you have to. They're trying to kill you. Don't stop now. And then you see Thanos and his mission to assemble the Infinity Stones.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, he has to sacrifice somebody that he loves. And the whole movie is kind of set up that Thanos only cares about himself.
Right.
But that's not true. And as you see, he cares deeply for Gamora. Whether she believes it or not, he does. And it's played out through some flashbacks that are really important, I think, to build the relationship between Thanos and Gamora. And you see him, tears in his eyes, legit killing her and taking the Soul Stone from Red Skull, which I thought that was a nice little throwback to the first Captain America, and have Red Skull be, I guess, the guardian of the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
And this makes, you know, Thanos near impossible to defeat, and then his final search is for the Time Stone, and then the stone that Vision has. Come to find out, the Tesseract also has an Infinity Stone, which Thanos finds earlier in the movie whenever he kills Loki. So, one of the big showdowns in the film is when Thanos is fighting Spider-Man, most of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and Iron Man and Doctor Strange. And they almost have them. They almost have them down. But Star-Lord finds out that it was Thanos that killed Gamora and messes it up for all of them.
Yep.
And, like, all of us in the theater are like, no! No!
Right. It's the single most frustrating part of the film. Frustrating, not sad but frustrating, you know.
So there, so eventually Thanos defeats them, and in order to save Tony Stark's life, Stephen Strange gives him the Time Stone.
Yeah.
But not before. So after he gives him the Time Stone, and Thanos leaves, and they're like, "Why'd you do it?" And Stephen Strange, Doctor Strange, is like, "I went over 14 million scenarios. This is the only one where we win." So you're kind of like, "Okay, this is leading towards something."
Yeah.
So then Thanos only has one stone left. And it's on Earth. The Vision has it. It's the one in his head.
Mm-hmm.
But then you see, like, the huge fight between the heroes on Earth, the Wakandans, against what looks like almost like the same people that invaded Earth in the Avengers first movie. Like, did you kind of did you think that was the same people?
I mean, yeah, look the same to me. And it would kind of make sense if it was. So, I buy that theory.
So you see a lot of, like, badass fighting. The Wakandans are legit. You've got the Scarlet Witch showing out. The Hulk, it still doesn't show up, but you've got Bruce Banner in the Hulkbuster armor, which I totally thought it was going to be the Hulk wearing Hulkbuster armor. Did you get that impression whenever you saw the previews?
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought that for sure. But we didn't know the story, or, you know, how the story would develop. So,
right. So eventually, Thanos comes to Earth and just rips the stone out of Vision's head, which I'm like, you didn't have to do my boy like that.
Right.
Puts it in. They're trying to... I'll back it up real quick. So Thanos has to make his way through all of the heroes left on Earth. And the one person who kind of... comes close to stopping him is Captain America, and Thanos, the look on Thanos' face is like, "Oh, that's cute," and just, like, brushes him off.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. But also kind of sad in the moment.
Absolutely.
So, you know, jumping to the end, the whole reason why Thanos is doing this is because he says there's only a finite number of resources on Earth. We're wasting them, and he wants to reduce the population in the universe by half, so the other half will have the resources to live. And he says, all it's going to take once I assemble all of these stones is a snap of my fingers. And that's what he does, and then you start seeing people fade away. And at first, I'm like, what's going on? And
right,
then you're like, holy crap, no. So the one that got me, and I want to hear from you too about the one that got you, but the one that got me was Spider-Man, where he's a Mr. Stark. I don't feel so good.
Yeah.
Like, oh no.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the most emotionally jarring, just because, especially the way they had kind of built up that scene and really built up his character, that, you know, like Iron Man, Tony Stark had kind of become like a mentor to Peter Parker, to Spider-Man. And even if you think about to the very beginning of the film, how Tony was, you know, talking with his, I guess, are they engaged at this point? I'm not sure. I forget. I think they are.
I think they are too.
Yeah. But talking about like settling down and starting a family and that being an option. And so this is kind of like his son in a sense, like his adopted son, if you will. And of course that plays into the whole Peter Parker story too. So just with all of that kind of story involved in it. Yeah. It's the most emotionally jarring. But then, like, also, you have Black Panther, and I know it, Black Panther, yeah. I mean, that's my baby, I get it, all that. But still, just given everything, and, you know, the success of the recent movie, and how much, you know, Black Panther, you know, King T'Challa is endeared in Wakanda. And you can see that, by the way, Okoye reacts when she realizes that he's died or whatever has happened. Yeah. Or that's the thing. Are we even sure that they really died? And this gets into a whole like theory and, you know, leading into, you know, the sequel, the second Infinity War, whatever it's going to be called. But like, have these characters actually died? Or, I've heard some
things,
like, they've gone down, like, they've gone into, like, an alternate plane or whatever, universe, whatever it is.
So, there's a couple of different theories that they're dead.
Yeah.
One is that they're dead. Two is that they're trapped in the Soul Stone.
Uh-huh.
I think the third I saw is that they're on, like, some, like, distant planet. You've set it up, though, with the Time Stone and its ability to reverse time. So there is a way to bring all these people back if they choose to.
Mm-hmm. Well, so here's the thing. You're not killing off Spider-Man. You're not killing off Black Panther. You're not killing off probably Doctor Strange. Without, you know, this early into things, and, you know, when each of them have only had one of their own solo movies, like, they ain't staying dead or whatever's happened to them. Like, they're coming back. I think pretty much everyone would agree with that, probably. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, or that I like to ask anyone about when I've had a chance to talk about this. What do you think about the fact that all of the original Avengers are kept alive? Like, how did you feel about that?
You know, that's something that I didn't realize was happening until after the movie, and I started thinking about it. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. All the original Avengers are left. So it's going to be all the original Avengers, Thor with Stormbreaker, which is his, he lost the Mjolnir. He now has an axe made from Baby Groot, or Teenage Groot, not Baby Groot.
Yeah.
And you also have what, Rocket Raccoon and Nebula. So it's interesting. It's going to take more than them.
Yeah.
Did think it was interesting that they stripped the whole series down to what's going to be Avengers Infinity War, I guess, Endgame, I think that's the name of it. They stripped the whole series down. You've had all these extra characters that come into the universe, and now it's just the original Avengers, which I think is neat. But then in one of the extra scenes, though, they set it up to where they're going to have some help. And I don't know, whenever you stayed, did you immediately recognize the little emblem that was on the pager?
Yeah, so I'm not that much of a nerd. I'm not saying that disparagingly. Not disparagingly when I say that. But obviously I did some research after the fact. And, Captain Marvel coming up. And I've heard some theories, read some theories, that if you didn't know that already, she could be one of the keys to undoing all the damage that's been done. Some of the other theories I know are, where were Hawkeye and Ant-Man? Well, we don't know, but they're probably still alive. And so they could play a role in that as well. And then there's some other theories that don't necessarily involve characters per se, but just like you said, like the time stone, or I've heard some other ones. I don't even remember off the top of my head, but there's a lot of different theories for how all this damage could be undone. So it'd be really interesting to see how they go about doing it.
Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, is supposed to be the most powerful person that they have introduced yet. So I'm very curious to see just how powerful she is. And also, I mentioned in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 of a race of people that they introduced called the Sovereign. They're the gold people. And I was reading about it. It's one of the scenes that they cut out from this movie, but I feel an important scene in what it's going to set up. Now, I'm a huge comic book nerd, and a character that they create is called Him, or other people may know him as Adam Warlock. Adam Warlock is also a very powerful character. And in the original comic books, is key to thwarting Thanos and the Infinity Stones in the Infinity Gauntlet. So I'm very curious if they're going to introduce him as well, and see how that plays into the storyline. But right now we don't know. You mentioned Ant-Man and Hawkeye. I don't know how important they could be in a battle against Thanos.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you need all hands on deck, but you're not dealing with a whole lot here.
And that's why I think they're hands on deck. I think they're extra cavalry to, maybe Ant-Man sneaks up on them and Maybe Ant-Man sneaks up on him and I don't know, somehow you know, steals one of the stones out of the gauntlet or something. I don't know. I mean, we're grasping for straws here, but their non-inclusion in this movie was interesting and makes you wonder what their potential involvement in the sequel could be.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the next one. I've told I've read that we're going to be shocked, but in a different way.
Uh-huh.
In regards to the next movie, and that's what Chris Hemsworth said whenever he was being interviewed. So I don't know. I don't know if my body is ready for more shocks than what I saw here.
Well, you still got about 11 months, so.
Yeah, and then, you know, in between, we still have Ant-Man and the Wasp coming out, which I'm really looking forward to. It's going to be a fun one. And then we also, before the next Avengers movie, we have the Captain Marvel standalone movie as well.
Right. Which apparently it's going to be, you know, another thing. The word just escaped, but origin, it'll be an origin story, and apparently, from what I've heard, takes place in like the 90s, and which also opens up this whole thing, like, okay, where was she during this whole thing? So which is another reason why, you know, there's good reason to think she'll play a major role in the second Infinity War, or whatever it's called.
So it's going to be interesting. So to wrap up this special podcast, I mentioned some of mine while we were talking about it. I didn't tell you the order. But out of all the movies that we've talked about, what are your top five Marvel movies so far?
Yeah, so, and I'm not a big fan of ordering things, necessarily. Like, I'm fine saying, like, top five, but I don't necessarily want to be hemmed into, like, this is five, this is four. You know what I'm saying? So, I'll just name my top five. So, obviously, Black Panther's in there. Captain America, Civil War. I would actually say the first Avengers is in there for me. See, and this movie, I'm still kind of like, I don't know where I want to put it. If I want to put it in the top five or not, definitely Thor Ragnarok, and I would probably go with the other Captain America, Winter Soldier. I think that's five. So those would be my top five. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, most of the movies in most of the 19 movies that Marvel has put out thus far in this, you know, MCU, have been pretty darn good.
Yeah, I'm like you whenever I don't know if I want to put Infinity War in my top five just yet. I feel like that would be impetuous to do so.
Uh-huh.
But it's so good. It's firmly in my top 10, though. I just don't know what it's top five yet. I need to watch it one more time just to see. So far, mine are Iron Man, the first one, Avengers, the first one, Winter Soldier, Civil War, and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm. Those are good.
It's hard to pick. It's hard to pick.
Yeah, it really
you know,
is.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy really? Volume 2 would fall in my top 10. Black Panther would fall in my top 10. Thor Ragnarok would fall in my top 10. Like I said, Infinity War falls in my top 10. And probably Ant-Man falls in my top 10. That's probably going to round out my top 10.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I like it. I like it. Well, this, yeah, like you said, this was kind of a special podcast, but I think the idea is we want to do more like this, right? Not necessarily specific, not necessarily specifically about Marvel or the Marvel universe, but just more culture type stuff.
Exactly, exactly. So what my plan is, and we'll firmly 100% agrees, and I've talked to Jason about this too, and he agrees. I'm going to talk to a few more people. Now, it's not necessarily going to be myself and Will. It might be Jason and Will, or Andreas and me, or whoever. We want to branch out, not just stick to sports. You know, we're not going to be stick to sports guy. We have a lot of other interests. I know Will has a lot of interest as well that extend outside of sports, and we want to expand upon that. And you know, we're all opinionated people, and we all like to talk. So I think this is a good way to get that out and exercise that. So look forward to more of these. I guess you could call them culture casts. So
yeah, So
this was our first one. You know, it'll get better the more we do it.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully, yep. So that's going to wrap up our first one, Will. Appreciate the conversation, man.
Yeah, well, let me ask you one, just real quick. You can answer this in a sentence, probably. One question. So, I know you also run the Facebook page, the South Louisiana Beer. What is it called? South Louisiana Craft Beer or something like that?
Yeah, South Louisiana Craft Beer Club.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to get it right. I'm technically a member, but I never post in there. But I see all your posts.
I post a lot.
Yeah. So what have you been drinking? Either tonight or what have you been sipping on that you've enjoyed the most recently?
Well, right now I'm sipping on a Stone Totalitarian Imperial Russian Stout. I picked this up. It's not available in my local Baton Rouge market. I picked on a business trip to Houston that I had in April. So this is this is a tasty stout that's definitely a sipper. It's sitting at about 10.5% alcohol, so it is a sipping beer. But the best beer that I've had lately has probably been it's a tie between two of them. Great Raft, which is in Shreveport, released at arm's length. It's a hoppy. It's an IPL. It's an India Pale Lager, so it's got that hoppy flavor, but the smoothness of a lager. So it's really good. It really hits the spot after you've done yard work or just like chilling on a hot day. And the other one was a small release that we get each year from Burial Brewing Company in Asheville, North Carolina. They released their double dry hopped IPA called Visions of a Valkyrie. And it was absolutely delicious, smooth, juicy, very tropical. It went down smoother than you can imagine. And the label work was out of this world. If you're a fan of the Big Lebowski like I am, you knew exactly what it was. It was Julianne Moore dressed up like a Valkyrie with bowling balls and bowling pins all over the place. So just killer label work.
Oh, my. That's great. That sounds good. I might have to get you to send me the name of that one from Shreveport. That's not well, there's possible times I might be going through Shreveport where I might want to pick some of that up. So But yeah, that sounds good.
Yep. So I'm definitely the beer guy, but I'm gonna be going on a sabbatical in July. Just you know, I know that you've seen my other posts too, and I've been walking and doing races and stuff like that, trying to lose some weight because the beer, while it's delicious, it's not good for your waistline.
No. No. Especially especially craft beer. And especially stouts and porters and things like that. So,
Well,
maybe if you like
5.5 miles tonight. So this is how I'm rewarding myself.
There you go. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Maybe if you were drinking Miller or something, like I'm going out to a bar tomorrow night with some friends, and I saw that they have like a $5. Miller and Jameson thing, so like I'm gonna get that. But that's not normally something I would do, but it's a, you know, it's like their happy hour thing or their Wednesday special or whatever. So but even that probably wouldn't be great for the waistline either.
Yeah, probably not.
Oh well. So, I think we can call that a night. It's been fun talking Avengers and Marvel Comic Universe. Until next time, peace out, y'all.
Later.